Welcome to the Radiance Podcast, an open discussion on how Christian faith integrates with game development. Here are your hosts, M. Joshua, Michael, and Thomas.
Welcome to the Radiance Podcast. My name is M. Joshua, and I'm here with my buddy Thomas. Thomas, say hello to the world.
Season 2!
And Thomas and I are here hosting the podcast again, ready and excited for another season of the show. And today we have one of my close buddies. I've actually gotten to hang out with him. He actually made food and for me to eat. We have to with us today the developer of Re-Elise, Justin Fox. Justin, say hello to the world.
Hello, everybody!
And also, just so that all of our listeners have nice, clear context, Justin is just the holiest form of crazy.
What is that even a sentence about?
And so I do that so that you don't have to. Before we started the show, you were apologizing to us for anything that you may or may not say. So I figured that it would be a nice little catch-all to bring everybody up to speed on what the expectations are going to be. Today, our episode is going to be just a little bit crazy, but we're going to stay on pace. We got some things that I'm so excited to talk about. We're going to get into Justin's story. We're going to find out about his spiritual formation, his game dev formation, and then we're going to get into our key topic, which is about the long haul, the process of developing a game, the long build of, you know, you start thinking, making a game, thinking it's going to take you 3 months, and it takes 3 years. So we're going to get into that, and I'm really excited. Justin, I have one question for you, and that's, what are you working on?
Well, what I'm working on now is just the main thing, which is release. I'm working on that and the Kickstarter, and actually a smaller project. I'll tell more about that a little bit later on for some guys out there in Atlanta. So that'll be really interesting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that project too, because they're going to be a big deal later on. It's really, really cool what they do. So just the main thing is this release right now and just trying to get that thing done, because good God.
How long have you been working on it, Justin?
Yeah.
It'll be in, I think, April, probably 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Four years. Okay.
Yeah. But actually, that's a technical number, too. I've been working on it on and off for years, really. It's just been one of those type of things where I had the initial idea, and then I got saved, and that messed everything all up. That's fine. But you know, that changed the direction of things drastically. And then, you know, it was just that one day where I was selling cars, because I love that job. I like selling things, but I was selling cars, and God just kind of gave me the nudge and called me out and said, like, you know, what are you doing? I was like, I'm selling cars. And he's like, what do you really want to do? And I was like, I want to make things for you, like games and things. Like, okay, go ahead and do that. And then I hurriedly didn't ask him how to do that. You know, I just kind of, you know, go steam full steam ahead. And Laura's kind of looking at me like, no, son, you gotta ask me how. Oh, why'd you do that for? Don't quit the job that early.
Should have asked for wisdom.
Yeah, I really should have. But you know, he turned into something good as well. So you know, it's kind of a win-win situation. But sometimes it's unnecessary losses in the winning.
Oh, yeah, totally. We're going to get much more into your story, and I want to hear more about the transition from selling cars to making the world's first Christian hip-hop RPG.
I got to say, I've been waiting for someone to make that.
Obviously.
So, Justin, how about just in if you can shrink it down into its shortest elevator pitch, what is Re-Elise?
Well, as you said, it is a 2D hand animated mature Christian hip hop turn based JRPG on a PC. But it's about a broken people trying to make the world a better place. It's just done through brokenness. I guess to put it in a sentence is phrase that God would use or asked one of the prophets, which was, can he make these dry bones live again?
Mm.
I guess that's the best way to re-say it. So can he make this brokenness live again?
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to you sharing more about the game in general. First, I have a question for you and about your current playing experience. So what are you currently or recently playing?
that's hard. Because I game so on and off right now because of the project. I think the main one I've been really liking so far and kind of going back to well, this is before Naruto comes out, and then I will consume my life, is Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Oh, nice. For the Wii U, right?
Yes. That's been a lot of fun.
And so what's the, like, biggest thing that you've – that's, like, your takeaway from it? Like, as a game designer, you're just, like, enthralled with?
From a standpoint of design, really, in that game, like, the fact that – I am in literal awe because it was like with the first Xenoblade Chronicles, like for the Wii. Rarely do I actually take in the scenery and just drop the controller and say, "Wow!" Like not because of the beauty of it, you know, but simply because it's alive and I'm looking at something that's very, very interesting. And I don't know what's over the next horizon, and there are interesting monsters doing interesting things, you know, where they're like. Mm-hmm. Feeding on something, you know, or they're doing their thing. I don't know what I'm going to see next. I never know what I'm going to see next over any horizon or hill or whatever. And so that's really exciting for me every time I play that game. Like I could care less about the story or anything like that. You know, I'm just kind of like, wow, I'm exploring a land and it's massive and it's really exciting.
Yeah, I remember hearing that it was like larger. Someone in the promotion of the game said that it's like larger than Fallout 4 and Witcher 3 combined or something ridiculous like that. Is that remotely true?
I wouldn't be able to tell you right now. I just know that the first one was just such an experience. The coolest thing about the first one, I would say that the first one's actually a better game than the second one, but I would say that, sorry, just I'm going off. But I would say that like the first one was really, really massive, but I do see that this one's going to be like 10 times, I would say something along the lines of that, yeah, because you have two different perspectives in terms of the design. So the perspective of, you know, just being some dude running around, but then you also have laid on top of that, but going congruently with that is when you get inside the mechs and you start, you know, driving around and exploring. Yeah, so it's like you have like almost a layered experience. So by its own nature, it's going to be larger.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Is there anything that you can say that like, speaks to you on like a maybe to get all hyper Christian-y that speaks to you on like a Christian level or like a kingdom level that you feel might be helpful to other game designers out there in the world?
I don't know anything in particular unless I kind of reach for it. There's something about wonder. There's something about that in particular that I really appreciate about that. And I think as believers, we stifle the wonder of God.
Yeah.
A lot. So it's kind of like, you know, we put them in our back pocket because we have this doctrine or this theology or this whatever, you know. But there should be a sense of wonder with the Lord because, you know, he's making some very, very vast and large claims when it comes to who he said that he was, you know, and who he said he actually is. Yeah. So, you know, for us to, in a matter of, you know, not intentional hubris, but it is kind of hubris to say that, you know, because I understand this about this and what is written here and what's written there, then that means I understand the entirety of God and therefore, you know, he's in my back pocket. I think that there's always going to be more with God just in general, and I'm learning that more and more, even when I thought that I had the proper theological background to back up my claims and everything, you know, but he expanded on me again. And he expanded on me again. And he expanded on me again. And he expanded on me again. So,
and that's definitely
just wonder.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of those things. I think that wonder is probably why a lot of us got into games in general, is just because like we're like, whoa, there's something big here. This is the point in the show that we want to really get to know how you came to Jesus. Really, yeah. So you earlier said that you were selling cars and that you thought that. You gain the sense that God was asking you, like, what are you supposed to do next? Is that, like, around the time that you actually, like, decided to follow Jesus? Or how did that relate to your spiritual formation at large? And where would you say things really kick-started?
I would say, I mean, I was agnostic for a really long time. I was agnostic all the way until 2008.
Oh,
so
wow.
So the two of them were not congruent in that kind of way. In 2008 was when I moved out for the first time in my life, and I was done with college and everything, you know, and so I was done being at home, and I honestly couldn't wait to get out. So this is like explore and wonder and everything, you know. I got my first job then lost my first job. And then I was like, oh, I have no idea what I'm going to do for anything. It was bad. It was like, you know, I didn't have money to really eat that much, so I had to like make makeshift things like,
oh man,
yeah, I got a hot dogs and I got some bread, so I'm just gonna taste some cheese and put it on the hot dog and the bread, and that's dinner. Yeah. So I lost like 20 pounds, and Josh has seen me in real life, and I don't have like 20 pounds to lose. So
no, you're skinnier than a rail.
Yeah, dude. So I don't need a knife. I just use my forearm. Ha ha. But I just didn't know what else to do. So I prayed to the God that I grew up on. I prayed to Jesus. And so when I did that, my aunt just sent the rent money out of nowhere for no reason. You know, she didn't know anything about my situation at all. There's one month where I just had a little bit of money, you know, and they're like, oh, we have a leftover special. So we actually you only had to pay $100 this time around. I was like, that's what I have. Like, oh my God. So I began to see that, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. And so one of my friends had invited me out to this event, and Kirk Franklin, of all people, was there. And Kirk Franklin is so tiny and cute, you just want to put him in your back pocket. It's like, oh, look at you up there. They did the altar call, or the sinner's prayer thing, you know. And so I just kind of like wanted to get closer to God, because I saw things that were happening when I prayed specifically to Jesus.
Yeah.
So I was wanting to get closer to him and everything. I was with my girlfriend, who's now my wife now, so now Lauren. And I stood up for that prayer, and nothing happened. So, you know, but then I came down to get my free Bible as your consolation prize or whatever. And they started asking me, interrogate me about why did I stand up and everything. And I told them I was trying to get closer to God, and one of them was kind of like, yeah, you don't need to get closer. You just need to, you know, receive. And I was like, don't try to talk to me like I ain't been raised in the church. I've been raised in the church, you know. So I knew everything, blah, blah, blah. But when he approached me about just receiving this forgiveness, this grace and everything, I went ahead and repented and received it just in faith. And then that's when the lights came on for the first time, and I've never been right since then. So you know, though, that was when it happened. It was in 2008. In 2012 was when I had that job, the car lot. No, I think it was 2012 or 2013. I forget which one it was, but that's when I was in that job, and the Lord just called me out one day, and that was that, really. I mean, he just asked me that question about what I really wanted to do, and I told him, and he said, go on and do it then.
Now, that's really cool. Now, more recently, I've noticed with you that there's been like, you've always been like this joyful kind of crazy that I really, really like. But more recently, you've kind of like come alive even more than that. Is there something like that really happened on top of, you know, like your salvation experience that just like made you far more willing to like just pray for people on a whim? Like,
it was more of the gifts of the Spirit that I had previously dismissed as being heretical. and awful, like, you know, like I think a lot of people do, because they see it. Many people have seen the abuse of that, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I would say that just like anything else, there's abuse in anything, no matter what kind of philosophy it is, or if it's a position of authority or whatever it is. There's always going to be the potential for abuse. So, you know, it's not really, you know, this thing where it's all bad. You know what I'm saying? So,
sure.
But I am saying that. After not believing in those things for a real long time, and seeing the documentary on the what was it called, the Kundalini energy and things like that, you know, and seeing the perpetration in the of those things, I was completely dismissed of it. But was just when some of my friends asked me, and he was very well read in the Bible, very studious in that, you know, I trusted him theologically, you know, to know what he was talking about, And I then just kind of prayed, you know, with him to receive the baptism of the Holy Spirit, because I was like, well, if nothing happens, then he just looks goofy. And I was right. If something does happen, then, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to trust God that, you know, we're trusting him. I know that he knows the Lord. I'm going to trust God and be like, okay, I know you're going to give me something good here if something does happen. And when that did happen, there's a greater sensitivity to the Holy Spirit began to come into my life. And It's just been a thing where I've just been kind of growing from that place there, and it's aided in my game and gaining a lot of different things, you know. And
that's the reason why I asked, really, is because it's obvious that, like, one of the things that just being close to you, and, you know, I obviously our listeners don't know this, but I your game was the first game that I ever made a trailer for. So I've been making trailers now. It's my business.
They're really good trailers, by the way. Plug. Really good trailers. Do it. Do it.
Hey. I'm not trying to plug myself so much, but I've also done the same thing for Thomas too. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Everybody on the podcast has to have a trailer.
It's true. But the one thing that I noticed because of working on your trailer, I was close to your project, close to you. And I noticed that, as you were going through the process, you were constantly almost like stopping at a moment's notice to just like hear from the Lord about anything, even like, what do I do with this particular character's, combat, choices and things along those lines. And it's caused your game to shift and transform into something that's not only entirely unique, but also seems to, you seem to catch up with it in a sense. Like, there's times where you're, someone, like, I've spotted things in your game. I'm like, this is awesome how you did this. And you're like, oh, I didn't even realize that we did that for that reason.
that is an actual thing where, because before, I mean, like, I could hear from the Lord and everything, you know, before I got baptized in the Holy Spirit. So I'm not saying that, you know, it's this thing where, you know, it didn't happen ever or anything like that at all. Uh-huh. But it was more like a following the impression in the Spirit, you know what I'm saying? That kind of thing. Yeah. Or just praying it and then just kind of going on with it. And you're completely right about that, because there's been plenty of times where, you know, saying what you're saying is like, I prayed before I wrote anything down, and then I just went with it. I gumped it. I like to use the phrase "I gumped it" because, you know, in Forrest Gump, the scene where he's with the sergeant, and the sergeant's like, "What is your primary objective, Gump?" He's like, "To do whatever you tell me, Drill Sergeant." He's like, "You must be a genius, Gump," and freaks completely out. Like, I think that God just kind of wants that, you know, just gump it. It's like, whatever you tell me, Drill Sergeant, and that's fine. So I would do that with the project, and I would write things down, and like, it's been amazing how I've had to catch up with what I wrote down years ago about that process, and really grow and things that I didn't know how they were going to work at all, you know. Then I would grow more and more, and just grew into how they were going to work. So that's been a really, really extremely interesting thing to be a part of.
And from my perception, this is just something that, like, in the 17th century, there was a guy who wrote a book called, his name was Brother Lawrence, and it's called Practicing the Presence of God. So I'm pretty sure most Christians, at least in my sphere and circles, have heard of this book and are all about it. So that just sounds like it's what you've been doing. Before we get into our deep dive topic, give us a short little version of how did you get into game development?
It was something that had always intrigued me when I was a kid, and something I was really wanting to do. My brother put the idea in my head. He was going to be the engineer, and I was going to be the artist, and, you know, we're going to make a company called Fox Co. Or something. this is what he wanted to call it. He wanted to call it Fox Co.
Not
Fox Die. It's a bright light. Fox Life. Ah! So, he has risen. I had an idea in my head for years, and my brother was really creative, and I think he still is, even though he's a dirty, filthy engineer. I'm just kidding, engineers. We need you. We love you. But, like, he's an engineer now. He works for IBM and everything, and I still, you know, we're still like, bro, yeah, we're all like, bro, you got to make your game. It's like his friends and me, and everyone's like, bro, what are you doing? But he's the one that inspired it all, really. He had these little spiral notebooks of these characters and these stories and video game ideas. And I mean, he was all the way in with it. He's the type of guy that made a Game Boy out of cardboard. So, like, he literally made a Game Boy out of cardboard, not like with circuits or any type of, you know, hardware inside of it. But he just took some cardboard and made a little joystick out of a paper clip. and he made these little cartridges, these little backgrounds you can stick into for a cartridge, and you would have this little magnet on top on the tip end of the paperclip. And so you could swap in and out characters depending on what game cartridge you put in there. And you just like, you know, but and you have like a little spinner on there, which would be like the die. So how many when you spun the little dies, how many times he could walk in the, on the surface and everything, you know, this is a real like a genuine genius, right? And he grew me up in this stuff. So when I got my first opportunity to make a game, which was with RPG Maker for the PlayStation 1, when I saw that, I was like,
so we're talking what, 1998 or something like that?
Something like that. Maybe early maybe 2000, maybe 1999, maybe 2000, something like that.
Wait, so it was RPG Maker for the PlayStation?
For the PlayStation, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like, that was a much earlier version, right, Justin?
Yeah, it's an earlier version, but not the first version. I mean, they've had those RPG Maker series going Japan going back to like the Super Nintendo.
Oh wow!
So yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's had a very, very long history. That was the first one to be ever be released in the States, though. So if I'm not mistaken about that, I'm pretty sure I'm accurate about that.
Cool.
When I saw that, I was like, wow, I get to actually do this. And for a month, I could not get anything on the screen. I was reading this book, and the book was pretty thick, actually, too. And so, yeah, for a month, I just got blackness on the screen. And I'm cool with blackness because I am black. So, you know what I'm saying? Throw it the fist. But, like, I was just had blackness on the screen. And that's all I got. So, but I just was so hungry for it, and I loved it so much, and I got into it so much. I made a 20 or 30-hour game on RPG Maker 1 for the PlayStation. And it was, like, maybe 6 memory cards long because all the data I had put on there. it was a chore, but it was something that I absolutely loved doing. Any chance I got, I just did it over and over and over again, and it was a real treat. So
I like your point about saying that you're hungry for it. Like, you were just like, and that's something that I've noticed about you too, is just like that insatiable desire of like, if it consumes you and it's something that you can't stop, you don't want to ever stop doing, but it's clear that that's like a huge passion, and passion is kind of invaluable when it comes to the hard knocks of the game dev process.
Absolutely, absolutely. If there's something that is very, very important, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that if you don't have passion for it, then, you know, you're just going to burn out eventually, because that's really what most things anyway. I mean, you can get by with doing what you're quote unquote supposed to do for so long until, you know, it catches up to the point where it's kind of like, there was something that I really actually did want to do and I'm passionate about doing, so I never made time to do it, and then it's regret and all those things, you know, too. But passion is a essential thing. I would rather have a person with passion than someone with just the right skills.
I want to transition a little bit to our key topic, and that's just this idea of the long build. Not yet finished this project that you've been sewing into for you said like almost 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Thomas, how long have you been working on Archmage Rises?
I'm coming up to my second full year. No, it's been longer than that.
you're wrapping up your second year, coming into your third.
You lose track.
Yeah.
You lose track.
Yeah. What is the thing that surprised you the most about how long it's taken to develop your game, Justin?
I didn't anticipate that the artwork would take as long as it's going to take, because I believed myself to be pretty fast with Photoshop and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But I hadn't anticipated me drawing as much as I was drawing, and because I have like 400 done.
Yeah.
You know, by myself, and that's what would kill all the time, is that, you know, I had to take a time away from this in order to do that, so I couldn't program and do this at the same time. So the artwork is a much, much, much bigger deal than I ever could have anticipated in terms of developing, because it is extremely time consuming. I didn't really factor that in. The programming itself is not that bad, but just that alone is ugh.
What's it been like for you, Thomas? How about you? What's been the biggest surprise of the time consumption for you?
Well, I'm on my third game right now, and so I have 2 released games in multiple stores and everything. And going back to my first game, when I was working on that, I had, I think, pretty much most of the game done in 6 weeks. I had this 6 week period where I locked myself in my cottage, pretty much no interaction with anybody, and I just banged it out. It was just it was 10 or more hours per day, just banging it out. And so I came at the end of that 6 weeks, and I'm like, hey, I'm like almost done. This is awesome. And then it took another year. So somebody once said
how
to me,
does that happen?
I was talking to a publisher at the time for that first game, and the publisher said to me, well, the thing you need to understand, Thomas, is there's the first 90% and the second 90%. First 90% took me 6 weeks, and the second 90% took me another year.
Yeah,
I feel that.
So when I got into working on my current game, Archmage Rises, you know, I had tooled around with a little bit of stuff, you know, not too seriously at the beginning when I started in November, and then when it was like, oh, this is turning into something, this is really something, I kind of knew, I'm like, this is like a multi-year project, like in terms of scale, like I just knew, like this is bigger than what I've worked on in the past. And yes, maybe I'm more experienced than I was then, but it's also larger, and that means more complications and stuff. So I knew I was getting a multi-year thing, but I do have to say, I'm, you know, coming up 2 years, and I'm like, I'm ready to be done.
Yeah.
And so are the fans.
that is the thing where you're ready to move on to something, you know, because during that development process is that. You, as you're doing it, you have other ideas as you're doing that, and you're like, oh my God, it would be really cool if I did this with this, you know, instead of going this direction, but I can't do that because that's not this project. But the next project, you know, I want to try this version of the gameplay, and then you're like, well, crap, I got to finish this one first. So then you kind of, you know, the build up to be done to start the other stuff that you want to start, you know, kind of begins from there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good and interesting point, because as I was working on my first couple of games, as I was working on the 150 games prior to those, you know, I'd be working on this thing, and then I would have ideas, as Justin just said, like I'd have these ideas and I'm like, oh, that doesn't fit here and stuff. And then I would start to get more enamored with the new ideas rather than the thing I was working on. And then you like put it down and then switch to the new thing and stuff. And that's how you end up with 100 games that you've never finished.
Prototypes.
Yeah, that's what we call them. That's right. They're prototypes. I was learning. what I found with Archmage Rises was the game was big enough in that I didn't have any ideas outside of it. And I don't just mean like, oh, I just threw everything in the kitchen sink into Archmage Rises. What I mean is, for some reason, my creative energies were contained within Archmage Rises. There wasn't any of this cheating with another idea going on. And so I don't know how you feel about that, Justin. Have you felt that way? Do you have a different experience?
Like, I mean, I've felt that way before, you know, but sometimes, you know, because release is so, I guess, versatile in terms of what it can do, because it's such a weird game. The same way that Thomas is talking about, you know, it's, I can kind of go there. So, like, for example, like, I was like, well, what about random encounters? You know, I was like, I don't want to do random encounters. But there's this other thing where I was like, well, maybe it'd be a cool thing where like a dungeon to be like randomly generated or whatever, or just like a random piece of a dungeon, you know, be. And so therefore, it's like every time you go there, it'd be something a little bit different, you know. Well, that's just procedural generation, but I really can't do that with RPG Maker. I mean, perhaps I could, but ain't nobody got time for that. But, you know, like, but I wanted to explore that, you know, and I was like, wait a minute, I have a subconscious world that's kind of trippy anyway, so I can just put those ideas into this section of the game so that I can maybe flesh that idea out and kind of prototype it inside this game, you know, and maybe put it towards another one. And I know Nintendo does it a lot. Nintendo will prototype stuff inside of their games, like, all the time. Like, Captain Toad, Treasure Tracker, I think is what it's called. Yes.
It was prototyped inside of Super Mario 3D World, wasn't it?
Right, exactly. So I'm kind of doing that, but release has enough weird things going on with it to where I can get away with it.
Cool, very cool. Because I want to make sure that that what we're talking about is entirely like practical to actual other game devs who get into making games or just thinking about it. Because I know that it's almost an epidemic to the point where we come up with an idea for a game, we start making it, and then it ends up taking far longer than we ever anticipated. Is that something that you feel, Thomas, is something that's just a matter of maturity? Or why do you think
Josh, everyone who doesn't finish a game is immature.
Well, I mean more along the lines of like the accumulated experience that you have as a game developer does that conceptually reduce the length of your projects the more that you develop games? Or
I'm still, you know, only three games in. I'm still really early in my game developing career. Like I've been doing it for 4 years now, and I had to take a break for 6 months. Then I had a couple kids, so I had to take a couple breaks there too. So, you know, maybe 4 years is only 2 years. It's easy to look at scope and say, oh, well, it's clearly at scope, right? So in my first game, Catch the Monkey, I was trying to hit 10 hours of content in a mobile platform. That is stupid. So that would be the technical industry term. So, you know, I could have just gone with, you know, 1.5 hours or something like that. And probably
that's a really good point.
Been just fine, especially in that marketplace. But I have found that just like 9 women can't make a baby in 1 month. I have found that there's just some ideas that you need to stew on. And, you know, I'm today before this podcast, as I'm busy working on my game, I've been working on the religion aspects, mechanics of my game. It's taken a couple of weeks to really like think through some of these things, right? It's not writing in the sense of penmanship, right? Like anybody can sit down and write the alphabet, but it's like fill a page that is compelling to, you know, a lot of people and stuff. It's like, wow, that's a lot of thinking that goes into that. The actual penmanship part is easy. It's the thinking part. And so I think one thing to consider is games just take a long time because they are artistic and they require that stewing period. Like you kind of, there's another side of steeping yourself in things. Like it's like, oh, I need to finish reading this book and then that will give me a good idea to put into my game. Well, how long does it take me to read the book? Like 2.5 months. So I can't work on that part of the game because I want to get to the end of the book before I can start to synthesize some of those ideas into the game and stuff. Like, so in some ways you can't speed it up. And I think that's hard when you're first going into it. You just think, oh, it's just a bunch of programming, a bunch of drawing, and then there you go.
Makes a whole lot of sense in terms of expectations. Justin, for you, what is the thing that, besides artwork, the aspects of things that take so much time, do you think, how did you come up with a scope for your game? Like, what was the thing that defined the length of release?
I didn't. So, I mean, the first game that I ever made was like 30 hours long, you know, but that was before all the assets that I could add to it. So, you know, I never did. And that's an amateur mistake right there. That's the benefit of starting out small, like Thomas did, and then going to your larger projects and everything, you know, because you can think about scale or whatever, you know. So I just simply did, and I just went for it, you know, and that's kind of the way I do things in general. I just go for it and see what happens. Not a good way to live, by the way.
How would you do things differently if you could speak to your younger self?
I don't know. It's like I would say to maybe start with something small, like a prototype. I would say do more prototyping.
Yeah.
Just so we can get a better idea of things. Cause I wouldn't prototype. I just kind of build it up from whatever. And I wasted a lot of time, you know, re-ramming the engine this way and that way. If I had just, you know, done a prototype first, you know, to see what was sticking, what worked, what was boring, you know, that kind of thing, you know, I wouldn't have to revamp my engine maybe 2, 3, 4 times or something crazy like that. So that wasted a lot of time. And that would be probably the biggest thing that I would go back and tell my younger and sexier self.
And so I have very little idea. I have assumptions. I have a lot of assumptions on what a prototype looks like. But imagine that I know nothing. How would you describe a prototype to someone who doesn't know like what that even looks like?
I guess you could say a prototype is the idea in action.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll put it that way. It's the idea in action. So it's not you adding any type of art or anything like that. Jonathan Blow did a video on some prototypes. He did a prototype video of a braid, actually. Uh-huh. And
all that that game was a block, and the mechanics were all there and everything, you know, but the character was a block, the enemies were also blocks, uh-huh. And that was pretty much it. So yeah.
There was no beauty to it.
That's right. It's just to see if it functions or not. And but he did a full talk on it's on YouTube. He did a full talk on prototyping just in general, and I found it to be very, very helpful. And I was wishing that I had done that, you know, with my current build right now. So
yeah, I think that's one of the struggles for anybody who watches something like Indie Game the Movie and then walks away thinking like, oh, I'm going to start being an indie game developer now, and doesn't realize that, like, well, it's not so simple. A, B, you have a million times as much competition as when those figures came out, and C, everything that you're thinking is going to be super easy. Like, I had one buddy in my game cell who's like, all right, I just want to make a game with accurate bullet physics. So, like, you shoot a guy into his head and the bullet actually, like, you know, goes through his head and looks like a real bullet would. And I'm like, good luck. I'm like, the reason why things are so, like, shorthanded is because everything in video games are super abstracted. But then you even have to strip that to even its most base abstraction to get to the prototype. And I think that you drawing out Jonathan Blow's little shaped squares in on top of squares is really, really helpful, because all we see, of course, is this beautifully, like, most, like, when Braid came out, it was probably one of the most beautiful games that had ever been produced on, like, in 2D, you know what I mean? Like,
right. So, yeah, I think that's one of the more critical aspects of things, and to understand, you know, the artwork is, I won't say last on the list, but you need to build up your foundation so you can add your artwork easier. And, you know, so it's kind of like, yeah. if you're drawing from a file here or whatever it is, you know, I'm like, okay, bring up this image here, you know, even though the image is not created, like, name it, claim it, all that stuff, you know, and then stick it in there, even if it is like a block. So later on, you can go back over, you know what I'm saying, and actually replace it with the actual sprites themselves. But as far, but make the build your engine, you know, keeping in mind with the 2D assets and also the type of things are going to go in place. So yeah. that's the foundational part right there. So there's other stuff, like the music and everything, can kind of flow in there, you know, even though it's not created quite yet.
And that's a great point. Thomas, for you, you've made some really great points about how to streamline the process long term for development, so that you don't, just to minimize the distance of the long build. What are some of the things that you would emphasize to folks who are just getting started in programming to kind of, like, streamline that process?
If you're just getting started in programming, and Justin, are you programming your game, or is it your brother that's programming for you?
I am programming it myself. So
yeah, okay.
I've had to kind of put on both hats, but it's one program I'm familiar with. So it's not that big a deal for me, but I wish I could use a better one, but whatever. Go ahead.
So when people are new to programming, it's new to them, but it's important to know programming itself is not new. And so as much as games look like software, and I would be the first to say that they're not, but in some aspects they are software. And so software has been around since the 60s, and how to go about building software has been around since the 60s. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of ideas. Yes. And when I say design patterns, I mean approaches. There's a lot of approaches that you can take to make software projects more successful, to be more streamlined, to cut out waste, like all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. when people are just starting new, they don't know, I'm entering into a field with a long history. That's right. I said something has been around 50 years is a long history.
Yeah. Well, in this case, 50 years is a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. But you think of, like, when, you know, Justin was just remarking on how he just became a Christian in about 5 or 6 years ago. Right. So you're all excited. You're like, wow, this is new and it's so exciting and whatever. And it's like, yeah, you just stepped into a long tradition of 2000 years. Right. Like, there's been a lot of people thinking about this for 2000 years. You know, you mentioned Brother Lawrence, for instance, and I have read his book, and it blew my mind. It was, like, amazing. Right. But when you first get into something, you think that since it's new to you, it's in a way new to everybody. And that's not true. And so to look around for how do you go about just making any software, regardless of a game, I think could be very helpful for a lot of the indie devs that that I, you know, rub shoulders with and talk with and stuff. The fact that a game is written through code and is a piece of software, that's pretty much where the likeness ends. There's another whole aspect to it, and one of the reasons that a game takes such a long time, and again, I think new people like myself getting into making the games, one of the things I didn't understand is it takes a while to figure out who the game is. And I mean that in like the personal sense. Like, who are you, Archmage? Like, who are you on the inside? It takes a while to figure out.
Very true.
It's not just about finding the fun, although that's one aspect. It's like what fits and what doesn't. And when you first have this inception of an idea at the beginning that's very exciting and you're very passionate about, the idea is so nebulous that it's hard to draw lines as to what's in and what's out. And then as you go along, it's like, okay, well, this is clearly not what this game is. You know, Justin used an example of randomly procedural generated, you know, dungeons and stuff, right? And same thing for me. I was like, okay, there's no overhead map that you run around on. Like, that's just not this game. But that was after months of working on the game and then finally deciding, you know what, that's not this game. And so the game is someone that you have to get to know. And once you know them, and now I'm almost 2 years in, I feel like now I know what Archmage Rises is. And it took me 2 years. And it's like, wow, Thomas, couldn't you go any faster? And the answer is, I don't know. That's how long it took me to figure out what it is. And so when we look at AAA, they call that process, even in film, they call that pre-production. Pre-production is just figuring out, what kind of movie is this? Is it gritty? Is it funny? Like, I know that it's written as an action piece, but how gritty is it, or how funny is it, or what are the bright colors and whatever? Like, they're bringing all these people and trying to figure out what is it? And so, yeah. I don't know, Justin, did you have that kind of challenge?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like I did, and it was one of the things where it's kind of like we went back to earlier where we're talking about the process of the pre-production. The pre-production for me was just gumping it with God, basically. So I had this thing that, you know, I was like, okay, he's saying this. I feel I need to be going in this direction or whatever, you know, or I'm just kind of like, you know, to the secular artist, it might be like a stream of consciousness thing kind of going on, you know. Instead of like this, except this kind of comes into a thing where it actually begins to merge into something, actually turns into something rather than just a stream of consciousness. So it's kind of like when I did that approach with it, I was like, what are you? Because I was doing the same thing. I was like, what are you? And what am I making here? And then throughout time, it became like, I see. But the main premise of it that I knew I wanted to do with it was that I wanted to a rounder picture of who God actually is, like a more three-dimensional picture of who God is. Because I think that a lot of people who have been hurt by religion have had a very, you know, 2D, if not one-dimensional view of who God is. You know what I mean? So I wanted to explore more about who he was with these broken characters more than anything else. But as far as like, you know, the little details and ins and outs of it, you know, I didn't. Yeah, it does take a time to really understand. I think the way to understand what it is that you're making, because you have all these ideas and all this stuff, you know, in you. And then it's manifesting and everything, you know, and then it's kind of like, well, what are you supposed to be?
Yeah, you brought up Jonathan Blow. He is a good example of someone that is very intelligent, has been around the block. He's made a number of games, not just Braid. And he just, as we're recording this, The Witness just came out like a week ago. I think it was last week that The Witness came out.
Two weeks ago.
Look at that. I can't judge time. No wonder my game's taking so long.
Wait, no. It was just a week ago. I'm all thrown off. I'm already like a week later in February. I'm like, okay. I can't keep up with all this. But
anyway, whether it's a week or two ago, The Witness just came out, and I've been listening to Jonathan Blow, watching, you know, YouTubes, hear him talk on podcasts, and he's talking about The Witness. And when he started out, he said, okay, The Witness is going to take me 2 years in order to make. 5 years later, it finally comes out, right? So this challenge is not just one for noobs, right?
Yeah.
Like, even well-experienced, financed people that are, you know, above average intelligence, like it's a difficult thing. And I think Jonathan would say, because I think I've heard him say it, that it was getting to know what the witness was, like what it really was. And it just it just took him that long to figure out what it actually was. Now, I haven't had a chance to play the game yet. So when I mention this for people that are getting new, they may not realize. They're like, oh, I know what my game is. It's realistic bullets in the head. Like, that's what my game
is. Yeah, yeah.
Right? And it's like, yeah, give yourself some time to get to know your game and who they are.
Yeah, and that's also one of the more time-consuming parts that, you know, that you wouldn't think, but just thinking things through. You know, it's like sometimes, you know, you may spend – it's kind of like how I think I forget which writer it was, but one of the writers. Sometimes I took a couple of writing, took several writing classes in my college days, and one of the things that they were talking about was getting to know your story, and then also some writers are very, very careful with the way that they write. So, for example, one person was saying that. Well, how'd you do today? He's like, yeah, I got a lot done today. I wrote a full paragraph. You know, from their book, not their poem or whatever, you know, but for their book. But sometimes just thinking things through and having them make sense just takes that long to do that. You know, because there are so many things, and Thomas, you'll attest to this too. There's so many things to think about, and the more inflated the project gets, the slower it almost takes, because it's like, okay, at first it was this, and now it's linked to this, and now 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 linked to this. So there's a whole thing sometimes you got to just consider, you know, to...
Yeah. One of my favorite lines from Spaceballs is, there's a time for action and a time to think, and this is no time to think. but I have a question for you, Justin.
Yeah, yeah. So
you said earlier that you're coming up to 4 years and working on your game. How do you stay motivated on 4 years, right? Like, 4 years, that's a long time.
Yeah.
How do you stay
motivated? I just keep on focusing on Christ. Like, I really want this story to come out, to show a bigger view of who God is in the hard stuff, because I think there's a lot of easy things when it comes to Christian media and everything. Uh-huh. But you know, he's just kind of giving me this vision, and the Holy Spirit is cooperating with it. You know, not just me, but I mean, people have been actively talking about, you know, like, God wants his art back, and it's going to be coming back through media. I had a friend even who, he was in Jerusalem. He's an older guy too. He's in Jerusalem, and the same thing that I was, kind of prophesying about, you know, God really wanting his artwork back, they were singing all the way over there in Jerusalem as well. Cause he's also a Messianic Jew. So he always wants to hang out with other Messianic Jews. And but they were saying the same thing. This is way, way over there, you know? So I just really have a passion and just want to really see it all the way through. And at the same time, too, it makes this on a logical level. If you're going to spend like 2 years into a project and you're just going to quit, you know what I'm saying? At this point in time, you're in a tunnel, and you're at that point in time where it's kind of like, okay, going back, I can barely see the light of where I came from, but I at least see more light coming in front of me than behind me.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense for me to go back anymore.
Yeah.
What kind of challenges have you had because it's gone on for so long? Like, I think you're married, right? You said you were married?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, for instance, isn't your spouse kind of like, when's the game going to be done? When's the game going to be done? When's the game going to be
done? She is, I think she's patiently waiting. I think that I give her a number of false dates that I'm going to finish to where she's like, whatever, this is all normal now. Like, you know, so I think the main thing with her is that as long as she's not seeing the back of your head too long, and just in terms of being in front of a computer and everything, as long as you're not seeing that too much, it's not that bad. But you know, I think I think it's important too to not only motivate yourself or talk about those things that God's putting on your spirit and everything, you know, but because you're married, you are one. So you talking to just yourself is not actually talking to yourself. It's talking to half of yourself.
So you need to do the same thing and bring up the same ambitions and dreams and all the type of things, you know, with your spouse as well, and motivate her in the same way. Otherwise, there's a half of you that is not going to be getting along. And when you are at war with yourself, you know, then what can be accomplished, really? Which is why, you know, even in a biblical sense, you know, you're supposed to be dying to yourself so that the spirit can move freely in your life. So in the same way in the marriage, you know, if you only have like half of yourself doing that, it's kind of like it manifests kind of in the same struggle between the flesh and the spirit. So you got to have the full thing taken over. So you got to talk to your wife. You got to motivate her also. You got to – all those things are very important too. And I think that the other challenge of it is just being kind of nebulous and like in terms of what you're doing every day, it can be really, really hard sometimes. It's just like, okay, I don't even want to work on this thing anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even want to work on this today or whatever. But, you know, finding your rest and finding those things is going to be very, very important, at least in my experience. I don't know about, yeah. I don't know about you, Tom, but well, you know, that's my experience.
You specifically brought up just the being – putting yourself on the same page with your wife. And I noticed that as I spent time with you guys, just how much she is supportive of you, but is also like completely behind the vision of the game. Like, she obviously, anybody else who hasn't met you guys doesn't know this, so this isn't obvious, but she did a lot of the artwork in the game. And she has been, you know, very hands-on with the project with you. It's not like she's just cheerleading or something along those lines.
She has come a long way with that. Because before, she swore up and down that she was a bad artist.
Uh-huh.
And Josh, you've seen her material, and it's like it's really, really something. Like, and that's not like a, you know, me being the doting husband, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, oh, my baby, she is just amazing, you know, and she's like drawing stick figures, you know. It's not like that. Like, just genuinely, she's one of the best artists I've ever seen. And that I personally know. So it was a matter of motivating her as well, because she did not think that she could do it or do anything useful with it and everything, you know. So that once again became a motivational thing. So she is invested in it because she's invested time into it for herself as well.
Yeah.
You know. So I think that's I think it really goes back down to, you know, motivating and saying that, you know, like, instead of her not participating at all and seeing, you know, the husband do these things that I don't understand, it's more like a matter of, I'm going to catch you up to speed about what to do with this, and here's how you can contribute. So she can do that through their artwork, you know, but just for a married situation, you know, maybe let her take on this aspect of it. If it's a strength that she has and she can help with that, you know, then get her involved in the process. So it doesn't feel like it's so much, you know, Justin and his thing, or Thomas and his thing, or Joshua and his thing, you know, but it was more like, you know, this is our thing and she can invest time in it and feel, you know, that she's helping, you know?
Yeah. That was super clear once we did that expo in Ohio together. Thomas, you had some other questions for Justin. Go for it.
Yeah, Justin, I'm just curious. You know, you said you've been working on this for 4 years. What are your friends, like, what do they say? Like, how does that interaction? I'm assuming you've told your friends that you're making this game, right?
Yeah.
And so what is that like for you?
When you say the term friends, I don't know what you're talking about. Is that a hip-hop group? I'm just kidding.
It's a song.
What are these friends, you know? I heard about a show about that, but I didn't know what that was about. Anyway, right. my buddies, I'm more of a – surprisingly to many people – even though the way I'm talking and everything, you know, is that I'm actually more of an introvert than I'm an extrovert, which is weird for people to hear, but I'm kind of a hermit anyway, so they kind of understand that anyway. But they just are kind of like, you know, like when it comes out, I'll be excited about it and everything, you know. So they're just kind of waiting, you know, and they're not really looking at me funny, like, you know, oh, he's never going to finish it and everything. I think they know me enough to where they know that I how passionate I am about it, and that answers a lot of questions for them without them having to necessarily ask it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to hear that it's not like Noah and his neighbors.
No, it's not like that. It's a pretty including and inclusive kind of dialogue that we have, because I mean, a lot of us even have some different projects, like Josh, you know about Mirage, aka Ian.
Yeah.
We've done a podcast together. I think we have before, but you know, I mean, he's in music and everything, and
he did the he did the rap track on your trailer.
Yeah. So he's really good. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to look at him cross-eyed because we're all kind of starting out right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm the guy that's always saying, you know, no, what do you really want to do? Stop surviving. We're not meant to survive. You know, like if God's saying that he's going to be clothing the flowers and feeding the birds and everything, you know, then what makes you think they're not going to take care of you? These are the essentials. So you're not working for the essentials. You're working for the ministry, the spreading of whatever it is that God is telling you to do. Use your job as a resource in order to spread this thing. So I'm going to get motivating them to get started also. So we're all kind of getting started in these things that God is, you know, pulling us in his direction. I'm the guy kind of, you know, tugging the rope saying that, come on, let's go. What do you really want to do? All right, stop playing around. Let's go. So that's why I don't really get that kind of like, what's wrong with you? You know, you're still doing this. You know, you're not going to make any money.
I might get like an alpha,
but that's pretty much it.
Or like the innovator or the trendsetter or something along those lines.
Yeah.
That's good. So,
when I go to
it's only parents who do that. You ain't making any money. You're going to kill my grandbaby. I'm like, okay, chill.
Actually, you bring up a great point there. It's like, what do you say to your parents and your in-laws and stuff, right? Because they're looking at you and going, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, very little. Say to them because, I've learned – and this is a generational thing too because –
Their perception is also that game development is like this this lazy way out or something along those lines, and I mean that's the way the world sees it, is that like game developers are the people who don't work 90 hours a week like they actually do.
Yeah. When I'm in a social situation, be it like a Bible study group I haven't been with for a long time, or I drive up north to see my in-laws, and the worst question, the one I fear, is people are like, "So how's the game going?" I have no idea how to answer that. Yeah, let me tell you that yesterday I was really kind of depressed about how little progress I've made in the last week, and so I played Pillars of Eternity all day. Like, yeah, I'm going to tell you. Do you dread that question, Justin?
I don't look at it that way. I just kind of look at it as them asking about to support me and everything because, I mean, for me, I know they could probably care less. You know what I'm saying? Because many of them are not about that life in the first place. So, you know, I just look at that as a kindness or a courtesy towards me and what I'm trying to do and everything, you know. And as far as, like, the in-laws go, or the parents and everything, you know, that's a different generation that may not understand. So I just, you know, I just don't talk about it with them a lot, you know.
So how many hours a week do you put into the game on average?
No judgment here. No judgment.
This is a safe place. Totally confidential.
As it broadcasts over the internet. I couldn't really tell you.
10 hours? 20 hours?
I would say maybe 20.
Okay.
Something like that. I would say maybe along the lines of that.
Yeah.
So,
you're working a full-time job, and we have to wrap up the interview soon so you can go to work. And so that's the big question that I have, because I've been in that situation where I work a full day at work, and then I come home, and then I have dinner and whatever, some time with the family, a bit, whatever. And now I have a choice. Work on the game, watch TV, or play a game, or something like that. How do you find that motivation inside to put in that 20 hours? It's easy in the first couple months, because you're kind of enamored with it and whatever. But, you know, you're 40 months later. How do you still find that energy?
It's tough. I mean, I'm even struggling with that now, just in terms of that, because you know where you're – because basically I have between – I get up around 2 o'clock, so I work third shift. Have between 2 o'clock, about 7:30 to just work on stuff. Get food. So maybe from like 3:30 on then I have time to just go ahead and do what I need to do. But a lot of times I won't even start until 5:30 because I'm just kind of like, you know what I'm saying, almost dreading it, you know. So that time gets cut a little bit. But one of the key things that I had to do, and I had to pray about this too, and I encourage other people to pray about this as well, is that sometimes you got to find the right kind of job to do that kind of thing with. You know, I'm not saying for you to quit your job. I'm just saying that, you know, you have to flow. You have to work along with what God's saying to do or how to allocate your time. There's a certain amount of flow with the Holy Spirit that you got to have in order to actually pull out the maximum that you have that's in you, because He's the author that made you. So therefore, He knows explicitly what you need to do, how you need to do it, all those details. So when you go outside of what God is saying to flow in terms of the flow, then you're going to be hitting snags over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But if you go, but if you go with the flow in terms of the Holy Spirit, because there's an image of you in your mind about how productive you can be. There's an image of you in there. Yeah. And sometimes there's a big gap between what you envision yourself to be able to do and what actually is executed. So, but I think that the Lord is the one who holds, you know, the keys to that. So I think it's a very, very important to flow along with that. When I prayed, you know, because I just got the, I think I just got the axe at a pizza place or whatever, you know, and like, I was like, Lord, I really want to get a security job so I can sit around and draw or work on my game.
Yeah.
You know, I specifically prayed for that kind of job. And then when I began to flow with Him and believe, I believed and then I began to flow with Him, I got that job, which is about the job I'm about to go to right now. I got that job and I do exactly that.
Sweet.
So, yeah, so therefore I have even more time to work on it, you know. But the other part of it is once again flowing with Him, because I've learned even yesterday that I cut off my flow when I'm working on this game too much. We don't communicate the way that we need to on a constant basis in terms of how He wants me to go about doing this or doing that or whatever, you know. So I have these moments of flow, but when I'm working on this game sometimes, you know what I'm saying, I have these moments where I might ask Him a question and then after that I cut the flow all back off again. Yeah. So that's a key thing that I'm learning even yesterday about productivity and keeping staying in the game and everything. You gotta flow with the Holy Spirit. You just gotta flow with Him and work with Him, because He wants the same things that you want, because you now have the Holy Spirit in you. So therefore, your wants and desires are now lined up with God. So therefore, it's okay to want things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And He just wants to be a part of your process. He just wants to be a part of your experience. Go ahead, Thomas.
Right. Yeah. One last question. It's Tom Francis that made Gunpoint, right? Was that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Tom Francis made Gunpoint, and I was in his GDC talk, and he was talking about how he made Gunpoint, and it was, you know, he was working kind of full time as his being reviewer and whatever, and then working on it on weekends and stuff, right? When he was in that experience, it was hard to find that time on weekends and stuff, but he said that the absence from the working on the game actually got him all excited to work on the game, right? Like he kind of couldn't work on it Monday through Friday, but like he could Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday, that kind of thing. Do you experience that, Justin, by the fact that you're working at this other job, like you're doing the security job, that you're like getting all, like when you get home and you sleep or whatever, then you're excited, hey, I get to work on the game because you've been away from it for so long?
Not anymore. like I was like, at first it was, yeah, it was that enamoring, you know, it's like, okay, I get to work on this thing now, but now it's like, okay, gotta get back to work here, you know, I gotta get up and get back to work, you know. And but once again, I really think that most of that has been contributed to the fact that I've been stopping my flow with the Holy Spirit without even realizing it, you know. I get into a method rather than a relationship with Him with the whole process. So but yeah, I never did. But there's a time where I kind of felt that way, you know. But yeah, I guess I can definitely see where that can happen with that kind of thing. It's like, oh, it's like kind of like, you know, you see your baby girl, you know, you see your kid or your wife. I'm not comparing my wife to a video game, but I am saying that like it's that kind of love that you have when and being far from that person or that thing, you know, does make you long for that person or thing, you know, all the more. So I can see definitely where that happens.
How many times you thought about giving up?
Well, I asked myself that probably on a monthly or maybe bi-monthly basis, not because I am wanting to give up, but because I want to make sure I'm in the right alignment with what God wants. So yeah, so it's like, Lord, am I messing up? Because you want me to throw this whole thing out, I will. And that is a really, really hard question to ask and everything, but I trust Him to the point now where I'm kind of like, I know what I'm saying, and I know that I don't want you to say yes to that question, but I know I trust you enough now to where I'm like, everything that you do is good and worth it and awesome, and when I don't fight you on these things, things just wind up a lot better.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of the dirty little secrets of game development or indie game development, where you're not being paid in order to like work on it, is that you pretty much think all the time about just giving up. Like life would be so much easier if I wasn't doing this. The fact that any independent game ever gets released is the miracle, you know? Like, you know, people don't really talk about it very much, but if you know, maybe if Jonathan Blow, you know, with The Witness, he's like, yeah, I was going to give up 42 times, right? Like, he's not going to go in an interview maybe and talk about that, right? But just any indie game, even if they're kind of terrible looking on Steam or whatever, you know, when I look at that and I go, you know what? Those guys, they didn't give up. When they asked themselves that question that month, they said, no, I'm going to go another month.
Yeah, yeah. That's key. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for being on the show with me. Justin, if people want to find out about Release, where do they go?
They go to release.com. That's R-E-E-L-I-S-E.com. Or you can go to No Room Fox. That also has a plethora of all the things that I'm wanting to do, because I'm wanting to kind of mature and grow up Christian media. So that's not quite as one-dimensional as it has been. I'm not mad at the soft stuff and everything, you know, but there's some difficult things in their maturity as well that we need to bring into the table as well. So if you want to find more about that, you can go to the No Room Fox. That's N-O-R-O-O-M, one word, No Room Fox.com, and you can kind of get a broader view of all the other projects that might be that you may be interested in as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, Justin. Go with God. Enjoy your work and being a security guard who gets to draw while on the job.
Swagger.
Awesome. Love you. Thank you so much. And Thomas, how can people find you and where can they learn about Archmage Rises?
They can go to archmagerises.com and everything is listed there. And then get a hold of me. There's a link to Facebook if you want to Facebook with me, and there it's all there.
Awesome. Very, very cool. And I'm M. Joshua, and I make game trailers. That's actually the name of my business, at mjoshua.com. And that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening to the Radiance Podcast. I hope that it's been beneficial for you. If you have any feedback or comments, it's extremely valuable to us. Go on to iTunes and give us a rating, write a review, say anything, tell people. It's extremely useful to us so that the podcast gets better recognition, and that we can be a better service to the community.
We like getting comments on the Radiance podcast website. You know,
when
those come through, I send them through to the rest of the guys so we all see them. And a lot of people have been sending those in, and it's been very encouraging. So thank you.
Yes, that's a very important point. And that is at
RadianceGameDev.com.
Exactly. That's right. I forgot. Cool. So thanks again for listening. That's goodbye.